Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 81 of The Morning After. I am Jesse Kiefer.
And I am Jen Teller.
Something just happened to me that actually hasn't happened in the, 40-something episodes I've been hosting.
What was it?
A pretty lady just clawed at me at the window here at Roberta's.
What? Now, define claw.
It was like a...
Like a kitten claw.
Like a kitten claw, yeah.
She might do it again.
Yeah, I think she might do it again.
Oh, she might be getting a photo op with us as we speak. She might be making fun of us. I feel a little bit like the penguins at the zoo.
I mean, I'm kind of okay with that just for an hour, though.
Yeah.
I can handle it for an hour, I think. And I also think it's probably just because I just turned 30.
Congratulations and happy birthday.
Thank you. We had a fantastic time. Thank you, all of you fans, for wishing me happy birthday.
Thousands. The poor assistant that had to field 20. Those emails and physical fan mail. God bless he or she.
So we kind of have a differently structured episode today.
It's a special episode.
It's a really special episode. And, we've been working on this for a while. And I think it's totally time for our highlight reel of our segment, The Front of House.
It really is. Because we've been doing this for a while now. It's seen some serious evolution. There was a time, a dark, dark time in which we did the Front of House segment minus the Dame. Do you remember those days?
I try not to.
As do I. But we have some exciting stuff coming up on the Morning After agenda in the next couple of months.
We decided to take our Front of House segment outside the confines of the studio, outside of the borough of Brooklyn. There wasn't any real decision on that, but we found a perfect space in Manhattan.
We did.
Across the East River. We're going there. And thank you so much to Jimmy Carbone. He is letting us use his stage at Jimmy's 43. And we are putting together the first ever live storytelling event of
Stories from the Front of House.
I'm totally excited. September 30th, 7 p.m. There will be a panel of celebrity judges.
Who is that going to be?
I don't know yet. And they will be choosing the best Front of House story. There will be a multitude of prizes, but the ultimate prize will be to come here to Roberta's, to the HRN studio, and perform the Front of House story live on the Morning After.
That's rich.
I'm incredibly excited about this.
Who wouldn't want to sit between us on a hungover Sunday inside of a shipping container and read a story? I mean, I feel like that's pretty good incentive. The wine and the potential pizza may help as well.
Okay, let's sell it. Yeah, there's free pizza here.
No, it's going to be amazing. We're super pumped, and we have a lot of amazing industry hands on board. Everybody at Heritage has been amazing about helping us get this off the ground, and hopefully it's going to end up being a running party. So this is the inaugural event. You want to be here for the first one. Trust me. I will be emceeing the event.
That's incentive enough.
Prepare yourself for some bad dad jokes.
So we are certainly going to be taking submissions. We'll be reaching out via all social media aspects that we can. But we also have a website, an email address for people to send submissions. It is morningafter.foh@gmail.com.
That's morningafter.foh@gmail.com.
I think that we should get into our highlight reel.
I'm ready. I can't wait to hear these. I've forgotten about some of these. It's been a while.
So the first two that we're going to do are kind of in the beginning stages. I think this is one of the first ones where the Dame was introduced, the first one we're going to hear. And the music, we hadn't gotten that quite right. And the second one is one where I attempted to read. And while I think I'm a very good writer, I kind of prefer hearing Jen read it.
Well, we'll see how we feel.
We'll see how you feel. All right. Let's hear those front of house stories,
Let's
Jack.
Let's do it.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
In 2007, I got my big break. I'd been working as a server at Restaurant X for a mere 2 weeks when I was approached by the owner and told we needed to talk. My bowels clenched immediately at the thought of a sit-down with Owner X. What had I done? Was it the wine-stained T-shirt I'd worn 3 days in a row, calling a trusted regular, "Hey, buddy"? As I quietly prepared to meet my end, Owner X poured us both a glass of burgundy. We were sitting at the bar. It was 11 a.m. "I'd like you to manage," she started, "and I'd like you to start today." She was impeccably manicured and slightly drunk. She wore a green felt cape and sensible New England loafers. I imagined her for a moment, drinking her way through a charity ball in Connecticut, flanked by Cary Grant and Diane Keaton, complaining about eating oysters in the fall. I sipped my wine. "Oh, okay," I said. "What exactly would that entail?" Owner X polished the remainder of her glass in one gulp and patted my knee. "You'll figure it out." And with that, she was gone, a blur of green felt and Protestant repression, leaving me alone. "I'll figure it out," I thought. "It's a Brooklyn cafe with a small staff and a limited menu. What could go wrong? Besides, if Owner X, clearly a woman of sound judgment, believes in me, so shall I believe in myself." I began a list of expired products in the walk-in, because list-making seemed a managerial thing to do. The staff were due to arrive any minute, and I would need to break the news of my promotion to them in a direct but diplomatic fashion. I ran to the office and grabbed a red Sharpie. On a piece of duct tape, I wrote, "Manager, yo," and stuck it to my shirt. I wasn't only helpful, I was clever. As I headed back upstairs to the dining room, bounce in my step and a song in my heart, I stopped in my tracks at the sound of shattering glass. I ducked around the corner to the storage room, where most of our wine and liquor was stored. Standing among the wreckage of broken wine bottles was Tanisha, my head server. In her left hand, she held an economy-sized trash bag. In her right, a bottle of vodka. She froze. "Oh, hey, girl!" "Hello, Tanisha. Now may not be the time, but I should tell you I have been promoted." I pointed to my name tag. "Oh, my God, congratulations!" she squealed, dropping the trash bag to pull me into a hug. Truth be told, she was my favorite, and her approval of my impending rise to success meant very much. "Pardon me, Tanisha, but I must ask, what are you doing with those bottles of liquor, by the way?" She rolled her eyes.
"Oh, don't worry about it. Congrats on the promotion and see you around. Oh, and I don't work here anymore."
Confused and slightly alarmed, I watched as she gathered the trash bag, knotted it, and walked upstairs. I followed her, still not sure I could believe what I was seeing, as she strolled out the front door and onto the street where a van with tinted windows was waiting for her. A side door flew open, she tossed in the bag, hopped in, and they sped off. I ran downstairs to find Owner X napping on a discarded banquette. "Tanisha just stole half of our liquor inventory. I watched her do it." Owner X wiped her eyes and sighed. "Oh, I forgot to tell you I fired her. What does Manager Yo mean?" My time as manager came to close approximately 3 days later when I fired myself. I'm not sure if it was the rampant New England alcoholism or the theft, but something told me I was not cut out for being in charge of these people. I still do have my name tag, and I am considering making a series of them for Etsy. Dream big, I say. Dream big, or go home. Thank you.
It's your favorite story. It's Front of House. It's a Front of House.
It was a full moon, which in the restaurant world can be a terrifying thing. Toilets back up, glassware shatters continuously, but worst of all, seemingly normal people can go batshit crazy. Case in point. The door to the restaurant flies open, and in tears my former manager. It has been months since Manager X worked at Restaurant X, and this is her first time back. She stops herself in the center of the restaurant between the bar and the dining room and proceeds to gutturally shout, "Hey-oh!" while simultaneously doing a booty drop. Heads turn, and this act prompts one guest to comment, "Wow, she should really come out of her shell." Manager X takes a seat, and it becomes immediately apparent that the full moon transformation has begun. Manager X stands up with her back to the table next to her to pose for a picture. In preparation for the photo, she begins to flip her hair, swishing it all over the food of the table behind her. The slightly annoyed diners carefully tap Manager X on the shoulder to say, "Can you please back up a little? Your hair is getting in our food." To which Manager X replies drunkly, "My hair is in your food?" and proceeds to grab the startled table's plates. "Well, we'll get you new food then," she slurs. Completely unaware of Manager X's relation to Restaurant X, the diners fear for the worst and grab their plates back. A tug of war ensues. I'll take these to the kitchen, she says. No, no, thank you, shout the annoyed diners. Oh, so you aren't happy with your food? Manager X declares. At this point, the bartender finally intervenes. What seems to be the problem here, he says calmly. Well, these people don't like their food, bitches Manager X. They're not enjoying their experience. The bartender whisks away the upset diners as Manager X storms out into the night. Later we learned the diners thought Manager X was going to punch them. And I like to think Manager X was only trying to help. If it wasn't for that damned full moon.
Yeah.
There's a special poetry that occurs when there's no music underneath it that I actually really like.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was that? Was it me saying X a lot?
You were incredibly articulate.
Thank you.
There was like really hard consonants, really plosive.
I'm not a trained actor like you.
Well, you could have fooled me.
So not every story is the story that Jen and I tell that we have experienced. We've been really lucky to have quite a few friends submit stories. So the next three front of house are from dear friends, former coworkers, and maybe lovers.
Oh.
Let's go.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
So this week's front of house comes from a good friend of our program, the lovely, talented, brilliant, beautiful Erin Sylvester, paramour of our beloved Jessie.
She's my girlfriend. She's your girlfriend. She's pretty funny too. This is going to be a good story.
So I feel that to truly do Erin justice, we again have to bring in a friend who's been lingering in the corner silently waiting for her time in the spotlight.
When she was in Nashville with you.
She was. If you listened in last week, I was traveling to Nashville as the companion and assistant to the Dame Joan Plowright, the Baroness Olivier, good friend of the show, frequent contributor. She wasn't walking so well, so I was helping her. We were at the Queen's Garden Mint Julep Jubilee. But she's here in studio, and she's offered to read Erin's front of house. Are you, Dame, are you ready?
I am quite ready. This is the story, true story, of good intentions gone terribly wrong. The night started out well. Busy, well-paced, reservations all on time. At the beginning of the second seating, two gentlemen were brought to table 31. Table 31 is considered to be a nice table. It's where the Obamas sat when they dined here. What makes it so nice is that it's a corner booth with a bit of privacy granted by an ever-changing, always dramatic floral arrangement that creates a screen of sorts between table 31 and its neighbor table, 28. In a small New York restaurant, any modicum of privacy is a gift. When the gentlemen were seated, I noticed that this week's ever-changing, always dramatic arrangement was branches and leaves, and it was forming a too tight halo over the head of one of the gentlemen. Quick to assist, I gracefully glided up to the table and offered my best help. I asked him earnestly and in the most professional voice I could cop, "Is that bush poking you in the head? Would you like me to trim it?" I paused for a second, deeply breathing in that sweet, sweet taste of regret. I averted my eyes from his certain look of horror, trying desperately to regroup. I began, "Let me rephrase," and mustered up the courage to look him in the eyes. Much to my surprise, his eyes twinkled as he looked back at me and said, "Honey, my head hasn't been poked by a bush in years." We looked at each other knowingly, as a lesbian and gay man can do. Touché. Touché. I never did fully recover. That dialogue went through my head 1,000 times that night. But at the end of the day, I'm glad I snipped away those leaves and branches. Because let's be honest, no one wants their head to be poked by a bush while they are eating dinner.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
This was actually a piece that was contributed by a friend of the show.
The lovely Sarah Hunt.
Thank you, Sarah. So I'm going to get the dame out of the bathroom and see if she can't join us and read this for us. Baroness, she's here. Jack, do we have some dame music? if not, you could just sing it.
That's my dame song.
I like that, actually. That's very ambient.
All right, she's here. She's with us. The following piece is called Waitressing Stay.
When I first moved to New York from Kansas City, I lied to get my first restaurant job. Before that, I worked for 1 week at a Tex-Mex little number called Cocopelli. Shortly thereafter, they were shut down by the health department, so I felt no qualms using them as a reference for 2 years of quality service, and I quote. Anyhow, here I found myself at a cheeky-themed diner in the middle of the theater district's extra-gay Hell's Kitchen. There were plenty of fabulous people, neon-colored martinis, and bass-blasting pop music. One night I had the middle section with three larger six-tops, you know, the ones with the disco ball lights and the record curtains. I fell in deep love with an exuberantly in-love couple celebrating their birthday. It went a little something like this. Hymn number one. I'll have the chicken fingers. Me, insert witty banter. Them, deals of laughter. Girl, you are fabulous. Me, confident, sassy comeback. Hymn number two. Oh my God, I think I love you. I return the affection. It was love at first wisecrack, you see. The drinks kept flowing, and pretty soon hymn number one was wasted. I mean slurring and swaying back and forth. Me, are you sure you should have another? Hymn number one. Baby girl. Am I sure the Pope is Catholic? Duh. I should mention this was before our current Pope had retired. Hymn number two. Honey, is this your last one? Hymn number one. Certainly not. Me. I drop the drink. Hymn number one. We love you. You're fabulous. What is your story? I tell him my story. Hymn number one. Honey, I'm going to ask her. Hymn number two. No, babe, don't. Hymn number one. No, I'm going to ask her. She's perfect. Are you fertile? Me. I'm sorry. Hymn number one. Fertile, I said. Okay, here's the sitch. Hymn number two. No, babe. Oh, God, don't do it. You had to. Oh, no. Here we go. Hymn number one. Shut up. My partner and I want a baby, and we're looking for an egg donor. You seem, insert nice description here, made even greater in his drunk goggles. I mean, I was Cindy Crawford to him, with a PhD from Stanford and Tina Fey's wit. Me. Oh, I'm so flattered, but I... Hymn number one, $10,000. No, $30,000, $40,000, $100 million, and you don't even have to see the little bugger. I blink, considering for a moment. Hymn number two. I'm sorry. Hymn number one. Well? Me. No, thank you, though. Hymn number two. Well, we'll have the check. Thank you.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house, it's front of house.
Back in the aughts, and I was wine bartending in some Midwestern city, we got a transfer from the downtown location. Upon some chance conversation, I realized that he had been a fellow musician in the Midwestern city of my origin. Our bands had even played together. He had done some time in a West Coast city with a decadent reputation, and he had come back. We shall call him Vince, with an E. Whether as punishment or not, I don't know, but he was assigned to work brunch despite his seniority. He'd been with the company for 3 years. Everything seemed normal as we set out for service and sipped coffee. Same air of conceit and disinterest in chatting with me or anyone. About after an hour, Vince seemed noticeably more mellow. So much so that when I put up an order of his, which consisted of 12 mimosas, his suddenly bleary-eyed response was, "That's a lot, man. How am I going to carry all of those?" As if he had not known how many he'd ordered or run drinks before in his 3 years at the company. I had already placed them on a tray and helpfully said so. I told him the hard part was putting them down. As I turned away, I heard a crash. When I turned back, all 12 glasses were broken, not one step away from the service station. A confused-looking Vince was already beating a retreat to the restroom. I pulled the host, Manis, aside and asked him to keep an eye on Vince's tables. Manis reported that Vince had talked to all of his tables, but not about waitery things, like how they want eggs or where the bathroom is. He had told one table an unbidden story about his car, and they still had no waters to drink.
The guest who had come to the bar to check on his order's whereabouts also asked whether his server was all right. Vince had not made eye contact and had been unable to control his unexplained giggling during their interaction. He had spent more than a couple minutes admiring the brick wall by the coffee station from about 5 inches distance, and his hands seemed to strangely entrance him. I suspected Vince was misusing psychedelic drugs. Those are not for one's terrible restaurant shift. They are for fun or enlightenment, if you don't already have that. He stayed in the bathroom for 3 hours, until Manus pried open the door to find him, head in hands, pants up, sitting on the closed toilet. "Are you okay?" Manus asked Vince. Vince shook his head. After a few moments, Vince emerged silently. He surprised us all by printing his check out. He then walked out slowly, with a 1,000-yard stare, only stopping to give me a ridiculously wrong amount of money. Like it said 34.37 on his checkout, and he gave me 27.90 or something. He walked out, even leaving his cell phone, never, ever, ever to return. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, she's gone.
Oh, she just flies away.
She always flies away so quickly. She's so sweet. Well, thank you, Daryl, and thank you, Dame. That's actually a sitcom I'd love to see, Daryl and the Dame.
Daryl, wasn't that one of Samantha's husbands on Bewitched?
Darren.
Oh.
There was only one Darren, but they switched actors like 3 seasons in and expected no one to realize, even though it was like a man of different height and totally different eye color. And they were like, yeah, it's still Darren.
Dick York and Dick Sargent. I remember that from Wayne's World, by the way.
Well done.
Thank you so much. Well, we have plenty more stories from the front of house. We're going to take a break here. We'll be right back on The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Heaven by Obesity on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from The Morning After and more stories from the front of house.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
We're back here on The Morning After. Now, the Dame is usually our orator, our storyteller.
She's our go-to, but she's old, you know? She's not always available.
She needs a break. She has a lot of retreats she needs to go on. A lot of procedures need to be done.
A lot of stuff with the hip. Things need to be drained.
It's too much.
It's messy.
So, we had, you know, we had a space open, and a dear friend of the show, a dear friend of Jen, Estelle Van Buren, She came and she read us a story, and maybe one of the most, I guess, a joint story between Jen and I. This is usually it's stories that we have experienced outside. This was the first one that we experienced together. And while not happening within a restaurant, there was a lot of, you know, restaurants in mind at the time.
Yeah, it was food related. Let's check it out.
It was food related.
It's your favorite story.
It's front of house. It's a front of house.
We've had a varied list of guests that have come in and read our segments for us. Bjork was lovely enough to be here 1 week. We, of course, often feature the Dame Joan Plowright, the Baroness Olivier.
Queen Latifah.
Queen Latifah was with us 1 week. This week I've actually called on a friend of mine, a gal from Brooklyn named Estelle Van Buren, who's a neighbor of mine, to detail our story. Estelle?
We should have known that this was coming. My co-host and I woke up bright and early. We left our respective homes in Bushwick and the East Village and serendipitously ran into each other on the train platform. What a surprise. Giddy from sleep deprivation and the prospect of a full day of food, booze, and reporting, we filed on to the Q train, destination the Great Goga Moga. We took our seats and I began to scan the subway car, checking for hot ladies, creeps, vomit, or scary adolescents. When my eyes stopped on this very old man dressed in a navy suit with the maroon turtleneck. My first three husbands loved the maroon turtleneck. His suit coat was placed neatly on his lap so as not to wrinkle while he was sitting down. How pleasant, I thought. This man in his 80s still likes to dress up when he rides the subway. As we entered the tunnel between Brooklyn and Manhattan, we noticed his shiny loafers almost tap dancing on the dingy floor. I think that's meant to be read as dingy, but I don't have on my spectacles. Of the Q train. We raised our eyes and realized his left hand moving vigorously underneath his strategically placed suit jacket. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my Jesus God, holy God, my co-host and I, transfixed and horrified, were looking like a Twitter picture of Amanda Bynes. People got on, and as he continued to get off, jerking and shaking along with the movement of the train. How did no one else notice this? Were they blind? We were alone in our disgust. When we finally arrived at our Prospect Park stop, we were shells of the people we used to be. I was shaking. My co-host was sweating. He is the reason we should have known this was coming. We got ourselves to the park grounds, and the sky seemed to darken. Up until this day, the weather forecast said it would be a sunny weekend. We tried to regroup. We had a beer, got some great interviews. Snuck behind the line with Jeepney and M. Wells. Lovely people. Asked Eddie Hung.
Huang.
What's... His name is Eddie, is the point. We asked him what was on the Chinese menu at Chardonnay's. We sipped some cocktails while talking to the Julie Reiner of Clover Club. Got an exclusive on Amanda Freitag's new restaurant, Mazel Tov, Amanda. And the old diner space. Beautiful. So what if it was raining? We were on a roll. And screw you, old dirty guy. When day two of the festival was canceled, it was time to look back on all of the great audio we collected. We were very excited. But to our dismay, none of it was recorded correctly. Nothing. Silch. Zippo. Sinky. Zero. I think the old man was an omen. He's the reason we were left empty-handed, if you will. Thank you so much.
Seriously. I love Estelle.
She's a hoot, man.
She added so many layers to that story.
She always does.
I love her very much.
She's a nice gal. She's usually in Miami, so it's hard to get her up here. But when we do, it's worth it.
Yeah, she's okay coming in like the rainy season, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When she's not getting her tan.
Yeah. Well, her great nephew had a bar mitzvah that week, so that's why she was up here in Flatbush.
So, you know, like we said earlier, the dame is our primary lady. Mm-hmm. She is. And mm-hmm. even when she goes away, sometimes she's able to get us by phone or Skype.
Sometimes just telepathically.
That too. So this is either by phone or telepathy. I'm not entirely sure about this next one, but let's go.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house, it's a front of house.
Well, so we're in part two of a three-part series called Blood, Sweat, and Tears for front of house. Gory, gruesome stories of blunder as our exploits of members of the front of house. And our story today actually comes from Kelly. Thank you for this story. It's
incredible.
It was
my pleasure.
Thank you, Kelly. Now, I'm actually here in Nashville as the traveling companion of the Baroness.
I had no idea.
Baroness Olivier, she was here for the Queen's Julep Garden Tea Party and asked me to accompany her as she's not walking so well these days. So I actually don't feel that I am qualified to read such an intense story, so I've actually invited her over to my parents' house to read it, if you'll have her.
Has Mary Gay made her some snacks and some tea?
You know what, Mary Gay, sweetheart, Mary Gay made her an omelet. It had a little cheese in it. I don't know if it's a Gouda or a feta, but it's definitely not cheddar, I can tell you that much.
Was it sweet or was it briny?
It's got sort of a neon orange color to it. So, yes, she did make the Baroness some omelets, and we did some grits, and we did some toasts, and now we're having some mimosas.
Well, I can't wait to hear from the Baroness on how she's digesting all of that.
She hasn't said much. She's shaking a bit. I don't know if that's the age or the terror.
Well, let's hear from her. I'm sick of hearing you.
Okay, well, she's here with me now. She says she's ready to go if you're ready to receive her.
I've never been more ready to receive her.
All right. Dame?
As I was putting an order into the micros for a rambunctious sip-sop of dates at Restaurant X, one of the floor managers came rushing over to my side with an urgent gig. "We need you in the men's room," he said in a hushed voice in my ear. Not knowing what this could possibly be about, I responded, "Are you sure it's me you need?" "Yes," he said, "it's you." Having recently studied to get my EMT license, I was becoming used to being pulled out of service to attend to a multitude of illnesses and injuries, both with guests of the restaurant and the staff. Without further hesitation, I hit send on the computer and whisked across the dining room floor with the same determination and poise as my manager, and as expected of any of us working at one of the most famous high-end restaurants in the world. One of the back servers was closing the door as I approached. "Come on, what's going on in there?" I whispered as my manager reached out for the door handle. "He has a problem, I think," Kamal responded with a shrug as he motioned towards the door and stepped out of the way. We walked into the bathroom to find an older gentleman sitting on the toilet. He was in his 70s and an obvious old New Yorker. He looked up at me and said, "Oh, hello there, darling. Good evening, sir. I am a server, but I am also an EMT. How can I help?" Still uncertain of what the problem was, I scanned the room for any prop or indication of injury. "Be terrific. My hip seems to have fallen out of its socket," he said. "No, it's I." "Oh, wow, I'm sorry to hear that, sir." I couldn't help but be distracted by the fact that the gentleman's pants were down. I wasn't sure of what may or may not be in the toilet, and in the very back of my mind was the concern that my station was going up in flames. "I think you should just be able to put it back in. It's happened before, just slide it up." Okay. That's what's not happening, I thought. Though I had completed my EMT course, I was no orthopedist and definitely not prepared for this moment. "But first, if you wouldn't mind, could you give me a courtesy flush? Well, our toilets are automatic, so we'd have to pick you up a little to do it. And I don't think..." He slung his arm around my neck tightly and said, "Okay, steady now, lean me toward my good side." My manager poked his head in to let me know that he had called 911 just as we got off flush, and I lowered the gentleman back down on the seat. "Okay now," he directed, "lift the hip up, line it up, line it up good." I gingerly cupped his naked hip and lifted it to where I thought it should go, as if I were lifting a newborn up to be baptized. "You got it, that's the spot. Now just hold it there." Just then the door swung open and my manager entered carrying a dining room chair. In behind him followed an older man, also in his 70s, holding two martinis. "Well, Harold, now you've done it," he joked while situating himself in the chair across from the man on the toilet. He handed Harold a martini. The two men sipped their martinis, talked about what they had been planning to eat for dinner, and roared how they had been waiting for a reservation. I continued to hold the hip in place, down on one knee, becoming an extension of the toilet, and faded into the background to the sound of the jovial bickering of those men. I was quickly jolted back from my daze by the sound of sirens. Sirens! The paramedics had arrived, thank God. They entered the men's room with a controlled clamor of equipment. One of them quickly came over and took hold of the hip so I could step back. They thanked me, as did Harold, and I returned to my station. The captain I was working with came over to me, handed me a tray of silverware, and said, "Table 250 needs to be set up. for dessert.
Recently?
So I feel like that story was probably a story that the dame has a lot of closeness with, you know, an elderly man trapped on the toilet. I'm sure she's had to lift a few of them up.
Well, she doesn't identify with her age, you know. I think she identifies with her astrological sign, with her creative career. And she's had many lovers, and currently, the last time I spoke to her anyway, she was seeing someone who was quite young. It was a 26-year-old sculptor named Barich.
No last name.
Just Barich.
Good for her.
Yeah, he was Israeli. She was really excited about it. Apparently, he looks like George Seurat, so.
Well, more power to her. I'll ask her about that next week.
God bless.
So, following through with our front of house stories, kind of, I think the next two are us hitting our stride, you know, are us kind of being on the top of our game. The segment, it's fluid now. It makes sense.
Really fluid. There were a lot of fluids.
So fluid. Let's hear it, Joe.
It's front of house. It's a front of house.
It must be bonus season, I said aloud. Our downtown restaurant was filled with suits, hands waving to flag down any server to order another expensive bottle of wine they knew nothing about. Money to burn, you know. Money to burn. It is a well-known fact that in a blue and black sea of finely tailored gentlemen, everyone looks the same, smells the same, talks the same. This is most likely how these events transpired. A large group had been commanding the majority of the back half of the restaurant, scaring away other diners with their booming laughs and high fives. Some braved the proximity and were quickly lost in the Goldman City JP wave. After hours of this, one of my servers ran up to me and asked, "Where the F is table 42? "The guys in the suits," I said with a smirk. "Yes, with the longish hair," she said, frantically. "They just left," I responded. "Why?" I had seen them hilariously struggling inside of the restaurant's vestibule, unable to determine which way was out, like a mice in a maze. "Yes, that's a mice," I said. "Well, they just walked out on a $125 check," she said. Screeching into problem-solving mode, I said, "I am sure one of these suits knows them." But alas, they were not part of the boisterous group. They were lone suits, well camouflaged among their Brooks brothers. With time ticking away, I figured they had jumped in a cab and were long gone and laughing at us. But then I was reminded of the vestibule, and that only drunk people have a hard time walking out of the restaurant. Aha! I already had one up on them. Shit, I was mostly sober. Immediately I had an idea. What do drunk men want? Shots and bitches. Fuming, I flew out the door and down the block in the cold to the dirty 4 a.m. bar on the corner. It was ripe with just what they were looking for. Like a cat, I crept past the floor to ceiling windows, scanning the people inside. No luck, but just as I turned the corner to enter the bar, there was one of them. Longish hair, Mr. Dine and Ditch, smoking and mumbling on the phone. I walked right up to him and said, "Excuse me, sir. You were just at my restaurant, and you didn't pay your bill. Now hand me your credit card, and we shall pay it." Stunned, he handed it over. As I victoriously marched back to the restaurant, he followed behind, dragging his feet like a little kid caught in a lie. "Are you mad?" he drunkenly asked. "Why, yes, sir. Yes, I am," I replied. "You made me walk all the way down the block in the cold, because you don't know how to go out to a restaurant. Oh, and by the way, you will be leaving your server a 20% tip." "Okay," he moped, "but can you do the math for me?" And with that, I went home. Adieu, and thank you.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house, it's a front of house.
Splitting the dinner bill between friends, colleagues, lovers, even family, is not a hard thing for a server. Sure, a check split between 10 different credit cards on a busy night is worth cursing under your breath. Maybe even worth bitching about over several drinks after your shift. Pain in the arse, yes. Difficult? No.
I mean, maybe if you have some archaic POS system, like Squirrel, or God forbid, just a calculator. But for the most part, the machine does all the real work. Now, that being said, why in the world do people have to fight over paying the bill? In restaurants all over the God's green earth, loved ones are battling each other for the coveted title of check payer person. There is the classic grab the card out of the server's hand move, only to aggressively replace it with their own. The peaceful corner the server out of sight to discreetly pass off their credit card as if they were doing a drug deal move. There is the pathetic table scramble, a mad dash of hands whirling about, ripping paper, throwing napkins, knocking over drinks, and sometimes even scratching. Often the guest, who did not win in the scramble, will plea with you, saying things like, I will tip you more if you use my card, or she tips terribly, or her card will be declined. And sometimes, only sometimes, you will be threatened. I was working at a rock and roll sushi bar in a desert town I like to refer to as the land of the $30,000 millionaire. I had the patio section that night, which, as any seasoned server knows, is always the least conducive section to actual restaurant service and sanity. You have to deal with all of the elements, and you are always so disconnected from the bar and the kitchen. It's awful. You're lucky if you make it through a busy shift without a breakdown. As I walked what felt like the length of a football field from the bar to the patio, carrying 8 sake bombs, about 16 pounds of booze, mind you, I was getting close to said breakdown. I had a table of 8 fratty guys, flaunting and bragging about life, jobs, cars, alcohol intake, blah, be blah, be blah, be blah. They were a raucous bachelor party, just lubing it up before heading to the strip club, and had me running my ass off to meet their thirsty needs. To put it delicately, we were not getting along. When the time came to drop the check, all of the boys began to argue about who would pay the bill. To stop all of this spitting and posturing, I introduced the idea of putting all of their cards into a hat and selecting one lucky person to pay the big bill. They agreed, and with a drum roll, I swirled my hand around in the hat and pulled out a card. Relieved that they would soon be gone, I read the name, and no sooner did the last name leave my lips when said check payer stood up from his seat, took one look at me, removed his Oakleys from his frosted-tipped hair, and remarked, "You bitch. You stupid bitch. You knew that was my card." The slur seemed to reverberate throughout the starry night, and the patio went silent. I did my favorite stare and blink slowly, just to really let it sink in for the bro, turned around and swiped the card as his buddies began to shame him. I kept silent, knowing tears were welling up as I threw down his check. Maybe the fight to pay the bill is all about the gesture, not the actual gift. I had no idea who he was or what his card looked like, but I did know I just got a huge guilty tip. Thank you.
I feel like there's been a through line in a lot of these stories of server abuse. But from time to time, when the stars align, which was an almost rhyme.
Jenna Tsari in the house.
We in the front of house are given a gift. Mm-hmm. We're given so many kinds of gifts. Compliments, extra money, and in the case of the next story we're about to hear, something extra special.
And it's kind of almost something that can only happen in New York City. Or maybe not, like, in... But we're lucky enough that we have these kinds of people coming to our restaurants. So we're going to leave you with probably one of our favorite stories of the front of house. Again, the event is on September 30th at Jimmy's 43, 7 p.m. If you would like to submit a story, the email is morningafter.foh@gmail.com.
I'm Jen Talek.
And I'm Jesse Kiefer. Enjoy the story.
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
It was below freezing the night I met Celebrity X. After an armful of Grammy wins, relationship shockers, and a brief stint in Booze as Anonymous, Celebrity X had established herself as bona fide pop royalty. I, a lowly, nervous-handed plebeian, had no chance against her powers.
I was nearing the end of my shift that night at Restaurant X, a newly erected gastropub on the Lower East Side. Dinner had been quiet that evening as I polished a bucket of demitasse. I dreamt of what I had waiting at home. Peanut butter-filled pretzels, at least 2 cans of Modelo, and 5 full seasons of West Wing streaming on Netflix. My lips tingled with anticipation. "Don't wind down just yet," I heard my boss whisper in passing as he sauntered through the dining room on a phone call. He covered the phone with one hand and winked at me. "We have a special guest coming after hours," he said. "I'm losing my shit." He was an excitable gay Irishman and routinely rolled his eyes back in his head whenever something went decidedly good or bad. Celebrity X, as it turned out, was not only on her way. A friend of a friend of a friend who called Restaurant X and requested that they stay open past the normal 2 o'clock closing time to accommodate her crew, but was on her way with a bus full of 30 loud-talking star-fuckers. They would be given whatever they wanted, I was told, and I would be their girl slave until they felt fit to leave. I heard her before I saw her. Celebrity X's entrance was the stuff of magic. In she glided, her able-bodied security outfit forming a human wall around her, feet barely touching the floor as she removed her diamond-studded sunglasses. I hovered in the corner with my hands in my pocket, trying to appear as if I was unfazed by it all, when she stopped, looked me over, and said with a hiss, "Are you mine?" "I am serving you, yes," I said. She frowned, let out a long, dissatisfied sigh, and walked back to the bar. And so it was that I found myself carrying a tray of 60 chilled Patron shots to a crowd of designer-clad 19-year-olds, each somehow barking orders at me without once making eye contact. I felt as if I'd somehow been transported into that scene in Eyes Wide Shut, only instead of masks, my cloaked aggressors were in Manolo Blahniks and draped silk. At one point, a young woman with blunt-cut bangs and a lisp asked me, "Do you like being a waitress?" To which I jokingly replied, "Not half as much as I love being a rapper." The joke was not received, and the next thing I knew, I was being dragged by the arm like a rag doll and deposited on the sidewalk in front of the restaurant by lispy bangs. "Stay here," she said. I was too terrified to contest. It was mid-January, and I tried to make smoke rings with my breath before remembering that that doesn't work. And lispy bangs was back, this time with a group of others, including, to my shock, Celebrity X. "She's a rapper!" screamed lispy. I tried to save myself. "Oh, no, no, not really," I said. "I mean, I do it, but I mean, it's just silly stuff. A hobby, really." Celebrity X sucked on a cigarette as if the last remaining oxygen on Earth was stored in its filter and said, "Let's hear a rap then. Nigel, rap against her. Like a battle." What happened next can only be described as biblical. A battle did indeed ensue, and Nigel, though very drunk, was a noble competitor. I kept up as best I could, Celebrity X laughing and clapping like a schoolgirl seeing her first circus. I was instructed to, quote, "get dirtier" by Celebrity X, and never one to disobey authority, I ended with a grand finish that included a line about twisting Nigel's men parts in a knot like a pretzel and selling them at a hot dog stand. Everyone seemed generally pleased by this, and I was declared the winner. 4 hours later, as the sun rose on the after-party, Celeb X and crew began to file out. On her way to her tour bus, security beasts standing by, she grabbed my face with 2 hands, and she kissed me. She held the kiss for what seemed like 3 solid minutes, and I held my hands awkwardly at my side, eyes bulging. "You're a star," she said, and with that, she was gone. I walked to the Q train in a daze, not sure of whether to call my best friend to squeal or file a police report. When I finally arrived home, peanut butter pretzels staring at me from their station on the kitchen counter, I knew, suddenly and soberly, that I was, at last, a woman. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today.
Thanks for listening.